live.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Please be seated.
Just a moment to log in, and then we will get started. I'm ready when you want.
Great, terrific. Let's follow the rule and get started.
I'll get us on the record now. The United States Court of International Trade is now in session. The Honorable Timothy M. Wright, now presiding before court number 22-CV-160, Wheeland Tube versus United States. Will all counsel please state their names for the record, starting with plaintiff's counsel?
Good morning, Your Honor. Nicholas Birch with Shagrin Associates for plaintiff Wheeland Tube.
Good morning, Your Honor. Robert Kapira on behalf of the United States. I have John Zachary Forbes from the Department of Commerce with me as well.
Welcome to each of you.
Good morning, Your Honor. This is Jared Goldfeder from Trade Pacific here today on behalf of defendant intervener Hyundai Steel Company.
Good morning. This is Eugene Degnan from Morris Manning & Martin on behalf of Steel.
Good morning, Your Honor. This is Pang Lee from Arden Porter for defendant intervener Nexteel.
Mr. Degnan, can you just be sure when you're speaking to speak up a little bit? It was hard to hear your introduction.
Yes, Your Honor, I will.
Is that it? Anybody else? Okay, so my team. Justin, will you start us off?
Hi, I'm Justin Schwein, law clerk for Judge Drive.
Julie Park, intern to Judge Drive.
Chris Simonis, law clerk for Judge Drive.
Catherine?
Hi, I'm Catherine Zhao, and I'm an intern for Judge Drive.
Okay. So good morning, everybody, again, and let's just dig right in. I'm not going to read the questions because they're long. They're public and on the record, so everyone can follow along. We'll start with the first question, 1A, and we'll go to Hyundai to start, and then I'll come to government and Mr. Birch.
Thank you, Your Honor. And my intention here is to try to keep everything public to make life easier for everyone. With regard to your first question, our position is not that Commerce must issue an additional deficiency notice where Commerce finds that a respondent supplemental questionnaire is insufficient to merit granting a CEP offset. Rather, Commerce must issue an additional deficiency notice where it finds that a response is deficient with regard to the information it decides that it needs to perform a CEP offset analysis. In this regard, the plaintiff's position that Commerce simply disagreed with Hyundai Steel's analysis is not correct. Rather, Commerce's remand determination to deny Hyundai Steel a CEP offset stemmed largely from alleged deficiencies that it neither identified following the submission of the remand supplemental questionnaire, nor allowed Hyundai Steel an opportunity to address. And please allow me to highlight a few examples from the remand determination. At page 6, they say, quote, neither respondent provided sufficient evidence from their books and records linking expenses to selling specific culling activities. At page 11, they talk about another major fault with Hyundai's quantitative analysis was not presenting supporting evidence to tie expenses. Pages 11 to 12, they say Hyundai failed to provide quantitative data and corresponding support necessary to determine whether U.S. market operates at a higher or lower level of development. Now, I would say, importantly, we disagree that Hyundai Steel's remand supplemental questionnaire response was deficient. But nonetheless, that's what Commerce found, and it used those deficiencies as a major part of its justification to deny a CEP offset.
So, pardon me for interrupting, Mr. Goldfeder, but Mr. Birch, Kaipura, why are these not deficiencies that subsection D of 1677M would require the department to issue a deficiency notice?
Well, Your Honor, our position is that section 1677M paragraph D doesn't require the department to issue a further deficiency notice. The supplemental questionnaire itself was clear in what it was requiring of the parties, and after receiving that information, the department isn't obligated to, you know, engage in a back and forth or continue working with the parties if it finds those submissions to be deficient for the purpose of granting an offset.
Mr. Birch, anything you want to add to this?
Yes, Your Honor. What counsel for Hyundai Sales pointed out too is where Commerce disagreed with it or found that the evidence wasn't fully in supporting the claims it made. If Commerce was required to put out a supplemental questionnaire every time it disagreed with the respondent, it would never be able to reach any conclusion, because every time it reached a conclusion the respondent didn't like, it could say you have to issue a deficiency so I can present additional information. This would be just disagreements, as this court set out in Dong A. Steel in 2020, and on basically the same arguments, it explained that there were no deficiencies in the record. Rather, as I quote from the court, the fundamental difference in conclusions reached by the respondent and Commerce derived not from any shortcomings in the data, but from differing yet equally reasonable interpretations of the evidence. As the court also explained, 1677 MD, comes into force when the government, when Commerce rejects something that a respondent or an interested party has put in. Commerce never rejected anything put in by Hyundai Steel. It looked at it, it considered all of it, and said that that wasn't enough to support the burden that was on Hyundai Steel.
So are you suggesting that in order for the deficiency provision at 1677M to be invoked, the government, Commerce, would actually have to reject a submission?
Yes, Your Honor, that is has been our position from the first. That, again, that's how it was explained by the court in Dong A. Steel and other places. That's where 1677MD is triggered, that if there are deficiencies before Commerce can reject anything submitted because it is deficient, it has to allow for a correction of the deficiency. But here, Commerce rejected nothing. It looked at the evidence and made a determination supported by that evidence.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Goldfeder, why doesn't your theory of the case lead to the endless loop that Mr. Birch just outlined, which is to the extent that the government considers that something that's been submitted by a party is not adequate to make out whatever the request is that the party is making, that it then would be an endless loop of sending it back until ostensibly the party would be able to make out its case. Otherwise, the Commerce would be obligated under your theory to keep sending more deficiency notices to the party.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I think your question also will lead to a segue to the second question you have in your comments. I would say first, in this case, in many respects, has turned on 1677 MD. In the court's first opinion, you know, the court found that remand was necessary to ensure that Commerce, in this case, has complied with its obligations under 1677 MD to provide respondents with notice of the nature of any deficiencies that Commerce identified in the respective submission, and to the extent practicable, quote the statute, provide an opportunity to remedy or explain the deficiencies. And that's kind of how we got here now, which was we put in initial questionnaire responses. In the end, Commerce said, you know, maybe we could have, it was sufficient to grant a CEP offset until it wasn't, until they said maybe there were more questions we could have asked. that led to, you know, ultimately that led to your first remand, where the remand instructions were comply with 1677 MD. And Commerce really didn't follow your instructions. And this kind of goes to your second question in the letter, which was the remand instructions were to provide Hyundai Steel with notice of the nature of any deficiencies in their prior submissions so that we had an opportunity to remedy or explain. They did issue a supplemental questionnaire on remand, but there was nothing in there that identified any deficiencies in the prior response. They framed it as a request for further information. They issued six questions. None of these questions did they say, here's what you did wrong before. Here's what we found deficient in your prior submissions. Here's what we want you to do to cure deficiencies. There was none of that. Hyundai Steel,
thank you, Mr. Gilbert. Why wouldn't that qualify for invoking 1677 MD?
Well, Your Honor, our position is that the questionnaire did explain what the parties were required to submit. Specifically, Commerce explained that the respondents were required to provide a quantitative analysis showing how the expenses assigned to the period of review sales made at different claimed levels of trade impact price comparability, and gave them an opportunity to submit that information. So our position is that the questionnaire itself provided enough explanation for the parties to understand what they needed to submit.
For the quantitative.
Yes.
And isn't that what we're talking about, Mr. Goldfeder? It's the quantitative part that fell short here, according to the Department of Commerce. And that's what they gave you, supplemental, declined a supplemental questionnaire to respond. Isn't that correct?
Yeah, well, yes, Your Honor, and that's essentially what we're saying. In the initial questionnaire response in the underlying review, there was a Section 8 questionnaire that asked for a quantitative analysis. We provided that. Commerce basically said, you know, on remand, well, the final results, issues, and decision memo said, you know, we could have asked more questions. They never really said what was wrong with it. And in the supplemental questionnaire that they showed remand,
they asked for specific information, right, to support a quantitative analysis. Hyundai had the chance to provide that, and Commerce determined it was not sufficient. So I think in this instance, it seems to me that this leads to the endless loop situation. They're being asked, a party is being asked for certain information, the information specified, you don't claim that it wasn't adequately specified, and Commerce found the information was not sufficient to support the offset.
Yes, Robert, but the question that Commerce asked in its remand supplemental questionnaire was essentially a copy and paste of what they asked in the original Section 8 questionnaire. They didn't say anything about, this is what we think you did wrong last time.
Couldn't Mr. Birch argue you had two bites at the apple and sadly weren't able to satisfy Commerce on either one? We'll figure out if Commerce is applying the law correctly. That's our job. But it looks like that you had two bites. Mr. Birch, did you have anything? And then, Mr. Goldfeder, you were kindly, I really appreciated, bridging to the guidance. And I'm going to come to you in about a minute with a very crisp, short, tight answer about that. Mr. Birch, anything you want to add here?
Yes, Your Honor. Again, they had a second chance, exactly as you said. I'll also direct you to this court's opinion in Daikin America earlier this year. It's court case number 22-00122. Pretty much the same situation regarding a CEP offset. And there, Judge Baker said, the supplemental questionnaire afforded the respondent a chance to remedy the insufficiency insofar as 1677 MD required any such opportunity. That's exactly what happened here. They had a second chance. As counsel for Hyundai Steel just said, it was the questions they hadn't answered before. And also point out to Daikin and Daikin, that opinion also goes on to state that 1677 MD, as I've explained, only applies where there are facts available. And the court said there, There are no facts available, adverse or otherwise, for the department to employ when a respondent fails to carry its burden of showing eligibility for a constructed export price offset. Instead, the agency's duty is to simply deny the offset. That's what Commerce did here. The burden was not carried. There's no 1677 MD issue.
Mr. Goldfeder, very quickly, any response on the case Mr. Birch just offered, and then your brief comment on the guidance point in question 1A, and then I want to move on to our next question.
I don't have a specific response on the court case, except to say, you know, I just want to reiterate, Your Honor, our position is not that we agree that there was a deficiency on the, quite to the contrary, we don't think there was any deficiency. They asked for a quantitative analysis. The request is give us a quantitative analysis. That was it. We gave a quantitative analysis. And then in that same response, we said, we've used our best judgment. We've given you a quantitative analysis as you've requested. If this is not what you're looking for, because you haven't told us what you're specifically looking for, tell us and we'll do it. We'll give it to you.
What I don't understand, I don't understand they haven't told you what they're looking for. It's a very precise questionnaire, and you're not questioning that the questionnaire was clear as to the information being sought, correct?
Yes, I mean, the question was,
they didn't tell you what they were looking for, because you don't contest that the questionnaire was clear in the information it was seeking.
Right. They said provide a quantitative analysis. That analysis should not include direct expenses in it. That's essentially their instruction. We gave a quantitative analysis. It only considered indirect, not direct expenses. We gave an analysis that, in our view, complied with the request, and with given the very vague instruction, we complied with it.
Okay.
So we don't concede that there was any difference.
I understand. Can you offer a comment then on the second bullet, the guidance, the question of the guidance that you are, I think we may have already discussed this, but give one last tight shot at the guidance that you were seeking from them, the department, that is.
Yeah, thank you, Your Honor. This comes back to your instructions in the remand, which was, on remand, Commerce shall comply with its obligations to provide mandatory respondents with notice of the nature of any deficiencies. So what your instructions were, tell Hyundai Steel what you think they did wrong last time. But there was nothing about that. There was no guidance to say, in your initial response, this is what you did that we didn't like. There was no nature. They just basically repeated, for the most of the questions, including about the quantitative analysis, they just repeated the question, you know, asking the same question a second time.
Okay, I think I understand. So we're going to close with Mr. Kuiper. Why didn't Commerce have an obligation under the law to tell Hyundai why its earlier responses were insufficient in adding to the questionnaire that it sent? Why does the law not require that?
Well, to be clear, Your Honor, the supplemental questionnaire, you know, I think this is the point we've been discussing here, did inform the parties of what they were required to provide. And, you know, again, through the course of this litigation, you know, the shortcomings in their first responses, I think, were made clear. And rather than providing the analysis that Congress...
How were those shortcomings made clear?
In the supplemental questionnaire, and when Commerce asked for the quantitative analysis and gave the instructions that Mr. Goldfeder was just referring to.
Were there specific shortcomings in what Hyundai had provided to the department prior to the issuance of the supplemental?
Yes, there were, Your Honor. Instead of providing the analysis that Commerce was looking for, the respondents compared their employee labor data for the home market to the U.S. market, but neither respondent provided an analysis showing how expenses assigned to sales at different claimed levels of trade impacted the price comparability.
So did you tell them what you just said to us?
Excuse me?
Did you tell them what you just said to us?
Yes, we did, Your Honor. We said that.
Where?
In the, again, in the supplemental questionnaire.
Can you point to where in the supplemental questionnaire you said that? Anybody's up? Mr. Birch, you have the answer?
Yeah. Question four in the supplemental questionnaire says, please provide a quantitative analysis showing how the expenses assigned to PRR sales made at different claim channels of sales impact trade, level of trade impact trade compatibility. Exactly what Mr. Kapura just said.
Mr. Goldfeder?
Yeah, yes, Rona, that's, again, a copy and paste of what was issued in the original questionnaire, which we answered, and we, our position is we gave that we gave them a quantitative analysis showing, you know, using indirect expenses, what they asked for, but they still haven't told us what they didn't like. They just,
okay. Yeah, I think, the parties are going to, the court might say the parties apparently are going to have to agree to disagree over this point. let's go to 2A, please. Mr. Goldfeder, I'm going to give you a little bit of break to catch your breath. And we'll start with Mr. Kaipura.
Yes, so addressing the first bullet there, the short answer is that when it comes to the methodology, the statute doesn't place any specific requirements on Commerce in determining whether a CEP offset is warranted. Now, Commerce used the SAA, the Statement of Administrative Action, to develop its methodology for this comparison. You know, I can read the provision that was utilized if the court wants.
From the SAA?
Yes.
I always enjoy listening to a rendition of the SAA. Please go ahead.
Commerce will carefully investigate whether a level of trade adjustment should be made to increase or decrease normal value. However, if a respondent claims an adjustment to decrease normal value, as with all adjustments which benefit a responding firm, the respondent must demonstrate the appropriateness of such adjustment. Commerce will require evidence from the foreign producers that the functions performed by the sellers at the same level of trade in the U.S. and foreign markets are similar, and that different selling activities are actually performed at the allegedly different levels of trade.
And that shows us, just give us the headline from that portion of the SAA, the point you're wishing to make.
The point that we're wishing to make, Your Honor, is that in directly responding to the court's question, the statute itself doesn't tell Commerce what methodology to employ, right? It instructs Commerce to, you know, conduct this type of investigation, and Commerce is using the SAA as its guidance, you know, for making those determinations. So essentially what Commerce is attempting to do here is, again, reach this apples to apples comparison to determine whether or not the level, the selling functions are different between the two markets. I guess that's the punchline.
Mr. Goldfeder, where did the Department of Commerce run afoul of the, I'm not going to read out the statutory section, but the provision with respect to the CEP offset?
Thank you, Your Honor. And actually, you know, I guess this is an area where we agree that there is no, the statute doesn't provide any guidance about how Commerce should evaluate whether to grant a CEP offset. But I do want to mention the thing that's important. There are two provisions about adjustments in the statute. One is called the level of trade adjustment. The other is called the CEP offset. In the statutory, and I'm not going to read out the statute as much as I'm sure everyone would want to hear that, but the level of trade adjustment provisions do have guidelines about that there needs to be a demonstrated differences in price comparability. The provision of CEP offset does not contain any such language. The CEP offset language simply says, where normal value is established at a level of trade that's a more advanced stage of distribution than for the CEP level of trade, and a level of trade adjustment cannot be made, then, you know, a CEP offset will be granted. And there's no question here. there's no level of trade issue that no one is saying there is. But this, so the statutory provision focusing simply on CEP offset has no requirement for any sort of quantitative analysis or pricing analysis, et cetera. So it's silent in that regard. So when the other side is kind of trying to read in quantitative analysis into the CEP offset, they're taking that from a different provision concerning level of trade adjustments that is not applicable here.
So I guess the bottom line question for this point on 2A is there a way in which Commerce's methodology is not consistent with the statute?
Yeah, I mean, our position is just that there is no requirement in the statute for Commerce to consider quantitative or qualitative tools. Over time, they've looked at both. Up until a few years ago, there was a simple one-page chart that you would just fill in, and that's what they base it on. The approach for CEP offset that Commerce has undertaken has evolved and has changed over time. But there is nothing compelling in the statute that compels Commerce to use or to quantitative tools
I guess the question is there anything in the statute that prevents them from doing so?
No, there's nothing that requires them or prevents them from using quantitative or qualitative tools.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Birch, anything to contribute on this one? Then I want to move to B.
No, I totally agree. The statute is silent on what type of methodology Commerce is to use. As government counsel pointed out, it's also in the SAA, Congress did not point out any particular methodology. What they did focus on instead was the intensity they expected Commerce to apply in its analysis. They were very specific that this type of claims are open to manipulation, that Commerce should look closely at any claims, but not how Commerce looked closely. And the analysis Commerce did comply with that. Commerce is very specific, looked at all the different claims, dug in deeply to those. So what Commerce did was entirely consistent with the statute and with Congress's intent. And as this court and the Federal Circuit have found on many occasions where the statute is silent and does not direct Commerce to apply any specific methodology, Commerce enjoys discretion in choosing its methodology. That's found in the Federal Circuit's decision in JTEC 642F3D at 1383, as well as this court's opinions such as in Alguer Iron and Steel at 536F3D at 1374. So the Commerce was completely in line with the statute and especially with Congress's intent that it look closely at these claims.
Mr. Birch, the court appreciates the use of precedent in supporting your points.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May we trouble you to describe something that we have been studying and looking at, which is this concept of intensity. Can you give us an English language description of what the parties in Commerce mean when they speak about the intensity of sales?
Of sales?
Or the intensity of selling
activity.
Expenses?
What Commerce is trying to get down to is, I think, how much effort, time, and expense is put into each side. I don't know if there's ever a specific checklist that Commerce can look at. It's going to depend on, you know, the selling activities, what you have to do to make the sale in each market. That's why Commerce doesn't want to take just some qualitative claims that we sell harder here than here. And that's why Commerce in recent years has been very specific, including here, that they need to see a quantitative analysis, something supporting that. So it's not just, it is something hard to describe, you know, very much back to the old saw of I'll know it when I see it. It's very easy to claim that. But that's why Commerce requires a showing of it. And like I said, that is completely in line with what Congress intended that Commerce do, so that it's not a claim of, well, we're more intense here than here because we have more salesmen in this market. Well, that market's also bigger for you. So you really can't say that it's more intense for each sale.
So looking at a chart, which we were just looking at earlier this morning, where it shows these indirect selling expenses, and then there's personnel, and then there are other types of ISPs, and then there's a total, right? And then the intensity is, and correct me where I'm wrong, because I want to make sure we understand this, because the term is used so frequently, that the intensity of personnel is the personnel expense relative to the overall total ISP expense. So it's X percentage. And then that's true of all the other expenses that go along with it. So Commerce is just looking at, for example, the intensity of the use of individuals selling, or is it also, because if it takes all of the ISPs together, it's 100% intensity, right? Do we understand that correctly?
I have to say that, you know, this is not, I wouldn't say that's Commerce's approach. Commerce hasn't set out a specific approach. It told the respondents, show us this. This is the approach that the respondents chose to try and support their claims.
The approach being breaking down the individual elements of an ISP, right?
Into broad groups, as Commerce pointed out in its remand redetermination, they put together broad groups of these and said, these are applicable here, these are applicable here, because there's more expenses in this broad group here. We're going to say that's more intense.
What I don't understand is if you look at all of the indirect selling expenses together, it adds up to 100%. So the intensity is an identity. So that doesn't tell us anything, right? You have to get the intensity. You have to be looking at a subset of expense, like at individuals or at other type.
You have to definitely drill down. I mean, yes, the overall selling effort is 100% selling effort, but that the question has to go into, okay, where does that go into?
When Commerce draws conclusions based on how much of it is going into activity A versus activity B.
In this case, that's what they looked at, yes, because that's what was presented by the respondents.
Mr. Kaipura and Mr. CU and Mr. Forbes Consulting.
Yeah, sorry, I think the there's kind of two things here. This, first of all, the I think more the broad categories that the court was asking about, that more refers to the information that I think particularly Husteel was providing in order to try to make this comparison. But the point I wanted to make in terms of discussing the intensity question is really what we're trying to look at, and this is now bleeding into the court's next question, so I think it segues there, is that really what Commerce is trying to do is see how much effort, you know, that's where the intensity term is coming from, how much effort is being employed in the two markets, you know, in the importer's home market and the U.S. market. And that's why Commerce makes the point that it's looking at quantity of sales in order to determine that, right? So in other words, if you've got, you know, more selling expenses in the home market, but you're making 10 times the number of sales, there has to be a way to compare that to the intensity of the U.S. market, which, you know, in that hypothetical is much smaller.
Okay, so I had the wrong numerator and denominator. The numerator and denominator is you're comparing the total ISPs in the home market, and then your denominator is the total number of sales in the home market, compared to the ISPs in the U.S. market relative to total sales in the U.S. market. That's the intensity comparison.
Yes.
Do you agree?
I think that's how it was looked at, yes.
Mr. Goldfeder or Mr. Degnan, I don't know who wishes to respond. Do you all agree with that description?
I would like to respond to that, Your Honor. Yes. That is a very valid comparison that you just brought up. And Commerce has jump through hoops to avoid making that comparison, in fact, because if you do that comparison, it shows that Hoosteel's home market expenses are many, many times higher.
Just one, Mr. Degnan, can you pause on the advocacy for a moment? I'm just asking a definitional question to understand if you agree with Mr. Birch and Mr. Kaipura on what we just described as the concept of the intensity of sales and the type of comparison. Do you agree with that or not?
I agree that the word intensity has been used several different ways, but that's the correct way to use it. Basically, it comes down to per unit expenses. And if you take total expenses over total sales in each market, that would be a valid comparison.
Great. Per unit. Okay. So now please proceed with your, we'll move on to subsection B, where I take it you're speaking on behalf of Hoosteel, and please go ahead to offer an answer to that and continue what you were saying a moment ago.
Okay, great. This segues very well to what you were saying before about the what universe of sales you're looking at compared to the expenses. You wanted me to explain why Commerce's adjustment calculation was invalid. Commerce's adjustment in the final determination is not supported by substantial evidence because it continues the incorrectly double count adjustment. The simplest way to explain this may be by looking at Commerce's quantification methodology in the draft determination and then how they changed it into the final redetermination. In the draft redetermination, Commerce took Hoosteel's reported accumulated levels of intensity based on the relative value of goods sold in each market and then further allocated them over U.S. and home market sales quantity, reportedly to get to a per unit intensity. But as Hoosteel pointed out in his draft redetermination comments, Hoosteel had already made this allocation based on value. So Commerce, by allocating again over by quantity, was double counting. And Commerce admitted in their final draft that this was that we were correct, that they did double count. So they redid it for the final. But in the final, they did basically the same thing. They still took an allocation based on value, and then they allocated it again over quantity. You can't take a ratio, which is the allocation based on value, and divide it by a quantity. That's just mathematically absurd. It makes no sense whatsoever. So
Can I get a response from Mr. Kaipura on that, please?
Yes, Your Honor. So I believe the issue that Commerce had in the final determination with regard to what Hoosteel provided was that the documentation Hoosteel was providing didn't link to the reported indirect selling expenses, and it didn't support how Hoosteel determined which selling functions corresponded to each selling category. In other words, the documents that they were providing, Commerce wasn't able to link them to these sales categories. That was the issue that was going on.
So the issue wasn't at all what Mr. Degnan just said, which is that you took a ratio based on value and then you somehow tried to turn it
Both of them were issues, but ultimately there were two issues, really. But the one that Commerce was focusing on was this problem of the linkage in the documentation. But ultimately, yes, Commerce was attempting to reach this apples to apples comparison using sales quantity, not value.
Yeah, you said it differently. Mr. Birch, can you help? There seems to be a...
That's not what Commerce did at all, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. The issue was that Hoosteel in its analysis didn't do home market ISCs divided by home market sales, U.S. ISCs divided by U.S. sales. They did home market ISCs divided by home market sales, U.S. ISCs divided by something else. because they didn't want to divide it by home market sales. We pointed that out to Commerce, and in the final, they went back and redid the calculations and said home market ISEs divided by home market sales, U.S. ISEs divided by U.S. sales. And when they did that, the numbers completely flipped and rebutted Hustill's claim, which was why Hustill was so desperately trying to avoid using that direct calculation.
Mr. Degnan says that what Commerce was doing something with the value on value rather than U.S. quantity of sales in the U.S.
Value
the
US. Of sales or as a quantity by value. So, you know, $100 million here, $50 million there of sales.
And then they just divided that by, they took the ISPs and divided it by
the value.
The value to come up with a way, I guess, weighted per unit is what you might call it, weighted by value.
Or just what you know, amount of sales effort per dollar, you could say, per dollar of sales.
So why isn't that? That doesn't seem mathematically impossible or unreasonable, Mr. Degnan.
Yes, in fact, it is, Your Honor. It goes back to the point you made earlier. If you just take Hustill's indirect selling expenses on its home market sales and come up with ratio of each line item, you know, they spent 40% on this, 20% on this, 10% on this. And then you do the same for the U.S. sales, how much they spent total on U.S. sales, and then how much each line item. All that does is give you two different percentages of how much they spent in that pot of money. But it doesn't compare the two markets. Just because they spent 20% on selling on, you know, office rent in the U.S. and only 10% in the home market doesn't tell us anything. It just tells us how much of a piece of the pie they spent here compared to there. You have to put them on the same basis. What Hustill did was made the comparison if the two market sizes were the same. So they inflated the U.S. market to be the same size as the home market. And then you can make a comparison between the two. But
I'm sorry, why would you inflate one side of the equation? I don't understand that.
To make an apples to apples comparison.
The apples to apples is the per unit. You don't inflate the denominator.
You can use per unit by value, which we did, or per unit by quantity, pieces, tons, I guess. But you can't do both. Anyway, there's two issues here. First, I'm saying that their calculation of total over total sales in the home market and total over total sales in the U.S. market is not a comparison between the two markets, just an analysis within each market. You have to put them on the same basis. You can do that by value or much more intuitively and much more easy to say is just do it by quantity. And if you do either one, but not both. You can see that
I don't know. I guess, Mr. Degnan, want to move on to part C, but I guess I don't understand that. You have this, all the parties talk about intensity, which is why I asked Mr. Birch to help us, which he so usefully did, understand the intensity concept. And so if you have a certain number of sales and you have your ISPs, you come up with a percentage in the home market. And you do the exact same thing in the U.S. market. Those are figures that are valid for comparison, one would think. It gives you a sense of the intensity. You have, let's say you have $1 million of sales in the home market and $100,000 of ISPs, you have a ratio, it's 10%. Is that my math good so far? Okay, Mr. Forbes is confirming that. In the US market, let's say you have $100,000 of ISPs, but you have $500,000 of sales. So now you have a 20% intensity in the U.S. market. Why are those two numbers not comparable? Is that what Commerce did?
Because, yes, that's what Commerce did.
Hang on a second, Mr. Degnan. Is that what I'm describing, or Mr. Birch, is that an apt description of this, what we're arguing over here?
Yes, after a fact, yes.
Okay. Mr. Degnan, why are those two numbers not comparable?
Because 10%, remember, the word intensity is being used in different ways here. Intensity here just means per unit expenses. So 10% of the $500 million that Hugh Steele spent in the home market is way higher than 20% of the $1 million spent in the US market. So we're comparing the expense to Hugh Steele, home market versus US market. The expense is way, way higher because 10% of $500 million is way more than 20%.
But not as a percentage of sales. That's what they're interested in, is the same amount of selling activity occurring. That's what's that's how I understand this concept of intensity. But I think maybe we this is another point on which we have to agree to disagree. One more shot, Mr. Degnan, because I'm not understanding why Hugh Steele would want percentage apples to apples, percentage to percentage. Obviously, if they're going to be selling much more in the home market, they're going to have higher expenses. That tells us. Doesn't seem to tell us a lot.
But if you compare it to the U.S. side, they're spending way, way more per sale on the home market side than on the U.S. side. The numbers support
it. Per sale is the ratio.
It's the ratio of two different numbers, though, Your Honor. It's the ratio of a very large home market number versus a very much smaller U.S. number. I think this can be more easily seen when you just divide total expenses by per unit, and then you can see the big difference. But my last point, there's two aspects to this problem. The point still remains that even if Commerce had done this correctly, and I don't concede they did, you still can't take that number that they calculated and then divide it once again by per unit. That's just double counting and makes no sense whatsoever mathematically.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Degnan. Let's go on to our last question, which is 2C. And I think we're back with Mr. Goldfeder. Each of you, I'm going to ask Mr. Goldfeder to address the first bullet and Mr. Kaipura to address the second and Mr. Birch to address both.
Thank you, Your Honor. And listen, if you wouldn't mind, can I just weigh in just really briefly on the intensity issue? And I want to step back a little bit about the CEP offset and what it is. The CEP offset is a reduction to normal value to the, in this case, the home market selling price. The statute provides that a CEP offset will be granted if the home market level of trade is at a more advanced stage of distribution than the level of trade of the CEP. And by that, it means the price at which, in this case, Hyundai Steel sells to its U.S. affiliate. So the whole notion of the CEP offset, and the CEP offset is quantified based on the home market indirect selling expenses. That's how the calculation is made. So the theory is that if you are performing a lot more selling activities and at a greater level of intensity, meaning, you know, you're doing a lot more to make sales in the home market and thus incurring more indirect selling expenses, that's kind of reflected in the price. And so you want to ensure the apples to apples comparison by reducing the normal value by the amount of indirect selling expenses so that you can make sure that the normal value is on an equivalent basis to the CEP. So the whole notion of evaluating a CEP offset is and determining if the home market level of trade is at a more advanced stage of distribution gets you into this whole rigmarole of looking at selling activities, how many selling activities you perform, and what's the intensity at which you're performing it. Because if you're performing in selling activities at a higher level of intensity for the home market, that is indicative to Commerce that the home market level of trade is at this sort of more advanced stage of distribution than this when making the sale to an affiliate at the CEP level of trade. So then transitioning to your question C, what Hyundai Steel did, and our issue is a little bit different than Hugh Steel's. If you go back to the original Section 8 questionnaire, when they say report your levels of intensity, they say do it on a scale of zero. Report all of your selling activities that you performed, and for each level of trade in each market, market less, and put it on a scale of 0 to 10. So when, and it sounds like Your Honor and your staff have looked at the quantitative analysis carefully, and that's what Hyundai Steel did. They did this quantitative analysis. They looked at each of the selling activities performed in each market at each level of trade, did an analysis of the indirect selling expenses in each market, and then ultimately came up with a quantification for each selling activity on that scale of 0 to 10 that commerce required. So when we're looking at the levels of intensity that Hyundai Steel reported, they're on these scaled, converted 0 to 10 figures. And when you look at the chart, and it's important to note, commerce accepted the levels of intensity as we reported them. They didn't say it was deficient in any way. Where we're having objections to their approaches, they took what we reported, which showed, you know, it showed that Hyundai Steel performed a lot more selling activities to make home market sales. And it showed that within each selling activity, the intensity was greater, the intensity that had been quantified based on an evaluation of the indirect selling expenses incurred. Commerce accepted our scaled figures, but then they took it and then they did something else to it. They then, so they took our intensity level factors and they divided it in each market by the quantity sold in each market. So if we reported an activity, and let's say the intensity factor was 9 for the home market level of trade and 1 for the CEP level of trade. And again, that's when Hyundai Steel is making, you know, picking up the phone and making a sale to its US affiliate, which doesn't require much. So you have 9 and you have 1. That what that means for that activity is that Hyundai Steel's intensity level was 9 times greater to perform that activity for home market sales and for making sales to the affiliate. But then commerce took that number and divided it by the quantity sold in each market. So I want to use public figures. So let's say that the home market sales, I'm going to try to use the easy figures. Let's say the home market sales volume is 100 metric tons and the CEP sales volume is 5 metric tons. That means that the home market sales volume was 20 times greater than the CEP. Under commerce's approach, if you had an intensity level of 9 for the home market, that becomes 0.09. You take 9 divided by 100. They do the same thing on the CEP level of intensity. You had 1, you divide that by 5 metric tons, and now you have 0.2. So whereas we had reported 9 and 1, now all of a sudden they've divided it by the volume sold in each market, and now all of a sudden it looks like the CEP level of trade was 2 times more intense than the home market level of trade. But really, that's not telling you anything. All they're really doing is they're dividing the relative difference in volumes between the two markets by the relative difference in intensity that we had reported. So, you know, in this example, the home market is 20 times greater than the US, and the intensity level was 9 times greater. So 20 divided by 9, it gets you that same 2.2 difference. It's a meaningless statistic. It's simply all they're doing is telling you that the home market sales volume.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Goldfeder. I've got it. Let's use Mr. Goldfeder's numbers. Why is this double counting? We only get to per unit in his second step, or is there, Mr. Gold, let me ask you one very, very short question. Is the first number per unit in your hypothetical?
The numbers we're providing are not per unit expenses. They are scaled figures. We had a separate subsidiary step where evaluate.
Hold on. Very simple question. It seems to me the second step that you're claiming renders the number invalid moves us to a per unit set of expenses, which appears nobody's arguing here that per unit comparison is invalid. It's valid, correct? is a per unit comparison valid?
In theory, but not as they applied it here.
Okay, that's all I'm asking. We're in theory right now. Everyone agrees per unit comparisons. Okay, so if the second step gets them to per unit, what's wrong with it? Give it to us in a sentence, please.
They took scaled figures that...
What? I don't know what a scaled figure means. What do you mean by a scaled figure? Again, please just keep it to a sentence.
We were required to report the intensity factors on a for each activity, report it from 0 to 10, which we did. But those are just quantifications of a separate analysis done about the amount of indirect selling expenses incurred for each activity in each market.
Okay. Mr. Guy-Pura?
Well, Your Honor, I think our response, you know, goes directly to your question that the step of dividing it on the per unit basis was done to compare the markets. You know, Commerce's issue with what Hyundai provided was that there was no comparison. it wasn't taking into account the difference in size between the markets, and therefore they took that step to reach the per unit calculation.
The Commerce Department.
Commerce, yes, I'm sorry, Commerce did, yes.
Mr. Birch, any thoughts about this?
Yeah, I agree completely, Your Honor. I honestly could not follow what Hyundai Steel was actually claiming. They did tell you that they reported these levels intensities on a per sale basis. That was not true. As Commerce pointed out in its redetermination, it instead looked at broad categories of expenses, put them into the different markets, and report its intensities on, as Hyundai itself said on pages 5 and 6 of its comment, of its response to Commerce, that was reflected of for each market. They were looking at the overall market, the overall effort in that market. Commerce then irrationally took that and said, okay, if we divide to go to a per unit basis so that we're accounting for the size of that market, again, everything flips. It doesn't support Hyundai Steel's claims.
So what did Hyundai Steel provide that Commerce then moved to per unit? What exactly is the number they were giving Commerce?
So what Hyundai Steel did was took overall expenses in broad categories, said, no, here in this market, we spend this much money on this. We call that a 10. In this market, we spend less money on this. We call that a 5. So then they took that 10 and a 10 in here is a 5 here. And so Commerce said, well, if this market's a 10, but you're making, you know, 100 million there, we divide the 10 by 100 million to see the per unit intensity there. And here, if it's a 5, but you're only selling 20 million, we divide the 5 by the 20 million to see the per unit.
Mr. Goldfeder, why is he, tell me what's wrong with Mr. Birch's description of what Hyundai did.
Well, Hyundai Steel complied with Commerce's request. And if you go back to the initial Section A questionnaire, Commerce identifies the selling activities that they wanted us to provide intensity factors for. So these are not arbitrary categories we came up with. Commerce identified these categories for us to evaluate. We then performed a quantitative analysis. We had to identify each activity performed for each from Commerce's list for each market, which we did. And then within each category, Commerce's Section A questionnaire said, you need to report the intensity factors on a scale, assign it from 0 to 10, which we did, but we didn't do it arbitrarily. We didn't just make it up out of the numbers.
What was your denominator? What was your denominator as you reported intensity? The thing that you gave to Commerce. What was your denominator?
The denominator was the denominator is total ISEs.
That makes their point. They needed a per unit comparison. see how much the intensity is, I thought we all agreed intensity is per unit is a per unit evaluation of the amount of ISPs. You didn't give them that, so they were entitled to do it themselves. You did not give them, your denominator was not total sales. Seems to me that just logic suggests, given what they're trying to do, they would compare per unit to per unit. Otherwise, it's apples to oranges.
The CEP offset analysis is not, the whole evaluation is, should Commerce take the indirect selling expenses that have been reported and deduct it from normal value? The method, there's nothing in the statute, there's nothing in the questionnaire instructions that said it had to be on a per unit basis. The questionnaire instructions on the, in fact, in going back to the original questionnaire said, you have to, didn't say, there's nothing that says reported per unit. It said reported on a scale of 0 to 10. If you go to the Section A questionnaire and look at their chart where they identify the questionnaires, there's a header. It says, you need to report this 0 to 10. That is what we did to get to those assignments of 0 to 10. We had to identify the activities. Then they had to identify which of the selling.
I think I don't understand why they have to ask you to report it on a per unit basis. That's their job. They decide what the appropriate methodology is. You report your selling expenses, and they have a methodology. And as best I can tell, no one's argued that that methodology is inconsistent with the statute. So they go and they apply it, and would seem to be a reasonable methodology. Because you're comparing apples to apples, how much selling expense is being incurred with respect to each unit in the home market? What is the selling expense intensity in the export market in the United States? Last, we'll give you the final word, Mr. Goldfeder.
Right. I mean, like I said, we took the indirect selling expenses, identified the account. Commerce made us divide it and put it in the scale. When we report an intensity factor of 9, that's not like $9. It's not something that you convert. It's an intensity factor. Dividing an intensity factor by a quantity is kind of a meaningless statistic, because you're dividing a factor. If they wanted to do that, they should have gone back and started with the actual expenses we reported rather than a scaled figure. So all they've basically done through their, they've accepted our intensity factors, but as a starting point.
Yeah, I get your point. Mr. Birch, why was Commerce valid in, or not invalid in, dividing a intensity factor by per unit?
Basically, Your Honor, what he's calling an intensity factor is just a simplified version of total ISPs, or the percentage. He said, there's our boundary of ISPs in this case.
That's your perspective, Mr. Kuiper. Thank you, Mr. Birch. Mike Kuiper, any closing?
No, I would agree with that comment, Your Honor, and the point.
Mr. Goldfeder, I'm presuming you disagree, but I think you've done a good job in explaining your position. Okay, well, thanks to all remote and in person. Wish you all a good, before we leave, thanking the court family, our fantastic CSOs that keep us safe, and all our custodial staff that keep this building looking the way it does, our fantastic Lewis Hugh, our fantastic case manager, and our IT people who kept us all online so we could actually hear the arguments today. Everybody else who works in the courthouse, we are very appreciative to them. We thank you for your time and your arguments. Have a good Thursday.
All rise. The court now stands adjourned.